Mr. Lowry, reel four. We've talked about searchlights getting onto aircraft. When searchlights got onto aircraft and the guns got onto an aircraft, was it extremely difficult for a pilot to get out of it?
Oh, yes. There was two searchlights from going onto him. He was trying to, but he couldn't get out. He never got out anywhere. All the guns in the range were fine on them. Shells bursting all around them. In the end, they got one. We don't know which gun sight it came from, but they were all pretty close. And just blew up. That was it. The searchlight swung around, off of them, and looked for another target. Didn't get one.
When shells are exploding way up there in the sky, what happens to the shrapnel and the pieces?
All comes falling down.
That must be quite dangerous.
Well, it's away from us. As I say, they never bothered about gunners. They weren't going to come over to bomb a few guns. But they did radar. That's what they were after, radar. They used to go over and after the main targets, the factories or whatever, maybe just the houses. But they didn't come. We never come after us. We were.
So obviously, you, as you quite rightly say, you wouldn't know where your shrapnel fell.
Oh, no. I've heard the kids used to pick it up next day in the street. The children, Mr. Shrapnel. We never got it. It was too far away.
during this time when Tyneside was raided quite heavily, was there a lot of damage to the area?
Quite a bit, yeah. We never got really out to see it, because an hour later went home. But well, on the Tyne, there was quite a bit. Mm. There was one of the battleships, or cruisers, launched. Was King George the V or VI? I don't remember the name now. It was going to be launched one day. We had to stand to all night. We stood to the guns all night for that launch of that ship. Pay the jellies come over, go after it on the stocks. Or in the river. Nothing happened.
After standing to, as you see, and being in action all night, of course, what was the reaction when it was all over and you closed down, in effect? Were you tired, exhausted?
Oh, yeah. Tired. There was a case of... I think I was the only spare man. And I went out for the night. I had a... We've been having night after night, air raids up, crosses up, you could get to bed maybe. You soon get your head down, you're up again, another air raid, on the guns again, up and down. And I've been out, I had a pint, I was on my own, I remember. I had a pint, and the air raid too. I come back, got my head down, we're on Palliasis in Nisnuts. And I got my head down. Next morning, the cabin was empty. I got my pot and went down the coop house and got a cup of tea. They've been firing the guns all night and I stepped through it. A couple of pints just finished me off. I must have been exhausted. Because I was on my light sleeper, very light. It's a good job I wasn't on duty. I would have been right troubled if I hadn't gone onto the position on time. But anyway, rough duty, they were cleaning the guns, the guns had to be cleaned.
I was going to ask you about how the guns were maintained after being in action. What the kind of work were they doing?
Hot water, the gunners, and a gun to clean it out, open the valve, clean out with hot water.
And presumably all the other equipment would have to be checked as well?
Oh yes, all checked up, yeah.
Which would include what, electricals and
this? Oh, yes, we were checked every day. Every day, electricals. Mm. Yeah. Officers did that. Checked the batteries and things, yeah. But, the guns were cleaned hot water. That's why they couldn't get a cup of tea. All hot water being used. But I was lucky. I wasn't on duty. And if I had stepped away on duty, I would have been really troubled.
Yeah. Where was the ammunition kept in relation to the guns?
Oh, different boxes, like concrete boxes, hanging down. Doors on different positions, right around. The gun turned around, so there'd be a gun ammunition there, the rear of the gun. Whatever way that gun turned, there'd be ammunition to get on up, to take shape of the gun. Yeah.
And obviously very close to it.
Oh, yes. Maybe five or six yards or so in the area.
How many rounds would a battery hold at any given time?
Oh, quite a lot. Anyway, I couldn't check. Quite a lot. Mm.
And they were replaced, obviously, regularly.
They were kept topped up. Even with our gun barrels changed, with fired that many rounds, our gun barrels had been changed. What we didn't change were the engineers over there. The army engineers come around changed the gun barrels. Four guns. The barrels had been worn. There'd been that many rounds fired.
The noise, the sheer noise of gunfire, did that affect you?
Got your hearing of it, yeah.
You didn't have any protection for your ears up in the gun, gun crews?
No protection, no. Nobody had any protection. Made the ear ring a bit at night time. Because we were on a predictor, but there was one of us. We had to take sometimes spare men on the predictor to go on the guns. If you're on the guns at night time, we would do any ammunition, taking the ammunition from the box, the ammunition boxes to the gun. That was our job. When the gun flashed, phew, in the night, you couldn't see. You were doing anything by instinct, you seemed to know. You're blind. Everything was done by instinct, but the flashes.
There was no form of protection to?
None. Oh, no. Got your ears ringing a bit.
I suppose in old age, that's why many ex-gunners have got hearing problems.
Oh yes, I think I have a little bit, not bad. But when you're four guns, when you're underneath the barrel, you could be underneath the barrel seeing and near enough or near the barrel, and a big flasher in the dark. Right here, the noise, and oh yes, very noisy.
Did you lose any men through sickness or illness or injury?
Oh, we are. Lost one man, accidentally killed. After Dunkirk, we didn't carry rifles on the aircraft. We had rifles for guard duty. After Dunkirk, we all got rifles and ammunition. And this man was on guard. Well, they're in the guard room, see. And the corporal was sitting next to him. And he cleaned his rifle. It must have been around up the spout. And he pressed the trigger and killed this lad. Up Elstobica. That long in Sunderland, Elstob. I call it Elstob.
Must have had a tremendous effect on the chap who'd.
Oh, yes. He had to be court martialed. He had to be tried. And if we put under arrest and tried, court martialed. We had a good officer, because he was a solicitor.
Remember his name?
The lad. No, I can't remember. I know the one who was killed. Yeah,
the officer's name you were talking about.
No, I can't. I tell you, I'm forgetting all the officers. Mm. I think that was Hope. I can't be sure. He stood for them.
Essentially, the the unit was the same as you'd had in the drill all days. Was it the same group of people?
Oh, yes, the same group. Yeah. Oh, we had chaps coming in. From being called up, chaps called up age, and we had a lot of chaps from young lads from Scotland. What they call it? They came from the Highland Division. Well, they were two. Their battalion went to France, and they were too young, very young territorials. They were too young to go abroad, and they sent to us these young lads from the Highland Division. We had quite a few Scotch lads come from the Orkneys, those are right up Scotland.
Did they settle in well?
Oh yes, good crowd of lads, young fellas, fine. Oh, they're all fine chaps. Oh, fine mates. Mm-hmm.
And fine. Was the esprit de corps in the unit always of this high standard?
I would think so, yes, even the officers, good officers, yeah. That discipline, the men obeyed, there was no undiscipline, yeah. But they were good officers.
Do you recall getting any important visitors to inspect you or to look at you?
Only when we went to Rangoon. We didn't know where we were going, I said, before we...
We'll come to that.
We were in India.
Yes, we'll come to that.
At Lord Mountbatten. He got us round, like he used to talk to us. Oh, we
We'll come to that, obviously, when we come to that part of the story. So, Dunkirk, what effect had that upon you?
After Dunkirk?
It looked like a defeat. Looked like was we going to be...
We were never... strange this, I think, everybody British. We couldn't be defeated. Yeah. But what's strange that? What's the word for it? No defeat. If they come, they're going to give them a stick. Yeah. But I was going to say, we all got issued of rifles. Everyone had a rifle then, with ammunition. In case of... we all had 50 rounds each, in a cloth bandolier. In case of invasion. Or even the home guard in rifles, ammunition. But we had... previous that, we didn't have rifles. We had the rifle only for gun and guard.
And did you get the opportunity to fire your weapons in training?
Yes. We went to the firing range. That was up at... Air Force... there was an Air Force base up at, right up Northumberland. I can't think of the name. When you remember, I guess, Rusty.
The damage during the bombing raids round Newcastle, as you say, it got quite heavy at times.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever have a situation where you had contact with the civilians who thought, these people are coming through and bombing us, you're not hitting them, you're not criticising you in any way?
No. We never criticised. Mm. Because, I'll tell you a little private. Because one day, there was two of us off duty, me and another lad. And he said, the officer came to us, they'd run short of rags and things to clean the guns. He said, go round to his house, let's take a sack round and see if he can get any, if he'll give you any old rags and clothes and say, yeah, I mean, oh, what champion. It was after New Year. Well, you knew him, New Year is in Northumberland. It was a couple of days after New Year. Well, we're knocking these doors, that's and the women, the ladies, they were not looking around now, getting the odds and ends, what it could, rubbish, well, dusters and whatever. We got a load. We had to cake, New Year's cake, and wine. And my mate, the lad I was with, he said, could we go in this club? It's a personal thing. We go in this club. We had a big sack, sugar sack of rags. They're very good at civilians, all these people. Thought they were of us, thought we couldn't do any wrong. And we run this club, and the chaps, we've sent us free drinks. We didn't pay for a thing. Because they've been heavy raids and they've been fighting, and they knew what we've been doing. Well, we were all drunk. Look at you off duty. We got on duty, yeah. We got in the cabin. Well, you can guess what? The cads with all these ladies' clothes, pajamas, and all sorts. There were lads in there. Oh, it's where we took them to. Well, hell of a time. All got getting dressed up, you know, acting like a widow when they ought to get in the army. Just carrying on. A damn good laugh. Yeah. We were. And I was up, stretched out, drunk.
The air race over Tyneside kind of tailed off, didn't they? They were getting out of range, really, for a German aircraft.
Yes.
And that would be quiet at times for you.
That's right, it was quieter. Did get quieter, yes. They stopped coming over, just a regular. They end. That's when we got moved abroad.
Yeah. You were telling me this was in 1941, I think, that you got
1941,
moved.
Yes, would be, yeah.
Why did they move you away from, why did they take you and others, obviously, away from the anti-aircraft?
They put the ATS, on the instruments. At that time, they were starting to put the ATS on the instruments. And all the graded men, so you weren't A1, because we all had a check-up, medical check. They manned the guns. These ATS on the instruments. And the graded men on the guns. And they moved the A1 men abroad. That was us.
How did you feel about being told you were going abroad?
I was single. If I'd been married, there might have been a different kettle of fish. But I was a single chap, and I had no intention getting tied up at that time of life, where there was all that war on. Especially, I knew my parents, seeing my mother losing her first husband. I had no intention of leaving a widow and a kid without a father. That was my intention, my way of thinking.
Did you get embarkation leave?
Oh, yes.
How did parents feel about you going away?
All right. Yeah, they were all right.
Mother was a bit happy, was she?
Oh, she wasn't. She wasn't very happy. She'd gone through the 1914 war, and she wasn't.
And you wouldn't know where you were going?
Oh, no, not a clue. Not a clue. No, you were told nothing.
So they took you away from the gun site. You had your embarkation leave. Where did you go then?
Into Leeds. Leeds, yeah. We got to Leeds. We were there. Building private houses, empty private houses in Leeds, yeah. Around the Edingley cricket ground, that's where we were stationed. We had our meals there, we drilled in Edingley on the ground. We went along the cricket pitch, no cricket pitch, but the rugby played in a cricket ground. We had our drill around the concrete area, Edingley. Had our meals in Edingley, had a place in there with our meals, canteen. With a bat in there where the rugby players know all get together, one of those things. So I was heading that was in Leeds, yeah.
And what were they doing with you whilst you were there?
Oh, we got PT, mostly PT in the morning, running on the streets. You know, shorts and vest, a bit of a boots on as well, just to keep us pretty fit. And then they got drilled. And maybe you're going to route march now and again. Yeah, keep us fit.
You're just keeping you fit prior to
going abroad, yeah.
Going away.
Yeah.
Did you get medicals and inoculations and so on?
Not before, not previous, no, we didn't. No inoculations. We had plenty of inoculations. Well, in school, different ones, quite a lot. But nothing special to go abroad for. Until we got abroad. But no, we didn't have any special inoculations. We're in Leeds a few weeks. Yeah.
When did you move to after that?
Oh, we got orders to pack. All of a sudden, maybe all two, I think it was only a couple of hours. Orders. I think it was ush. And it was about 2 hours, so 3 hours to pack. Because we only had our equipment, see? Our packs. And we got on the train, went to the Clyde. Got on a boat on a ship there, the Louis Pasteur. The Louis Pasteur was in France when France collapsed, gave up the French ship. Gosh, that's the name, the Louis Pasteur. And the British took it over as a troop ship, the Louis Pasteur.
Do you remember what date you sailed?
It was in May, I know it was a month, I don't know the date. May, well, I know that I can't remember the year, it was in May 1941 we sailed.
That must have been quite an experience for a young lad that had never been very far to suddenly be on a huge ocean liner.
Yeah, I didn't be one on April, whatever. I said, the war on, accept it, so you've got a job to do, you might as well do this job, then the other job. Yeah. Going back, I mean, I could have been, if I hadn't joined the territorials, I would have been in a coal mine and I wouldn't have been called up because it was if I hadn't joined the terriers. Well, please, I did join. Even then, as you yourself say earlier on, I loved geography. I loved that. That was my favourite subject in school. At on the liner, yeah. And I'd misbehaved on that liner. And before that, on in Leeds, I'd misbehaved. I met these two girls, and these two little young girls took us to the house for the supper. Just met them. They were lovely people. Me and the man, mate, that's where. We should have been at 10. It was 11 o'clock when I got in. And another sergeant was there, put me on a charge. And I got 7 days sea bay. That's 7 days compact at barracks. I got on the ship, And the sergeant came to me and said, you were on contraband at barracks. Well, you'll go and see the chief petty officer. The chief officer, sorry. Yeah. The chief steward, sorry, I'm getting mixed up. I went down to chief steward, I stood there outside his office. I saw these other chaps who must have been in trouble cleaning dirty old pans. Oh, that's the job I'm going to do. when Safe Tools Company, they gave us, I got a job with a pantry boy, what a smashing job, clean, serving the stewards, say, when they come round, because the officers, they'll get a first class, and the first class come back on this Louis Pasta. I would give them, you know, coffee and the milk, whatever they wanted, as a come, as a chief, the stewards come round. I had a smashing job in there. But hey, I got extra pay. I got extra pay of the company, the ship's company, for helping the crew, more or less. Yeah. Well, I can't remember how much. Was it on top of the army? But it was a lot then, on top of the army pay. Yeah.
It's still a private at this point in time.
Yeah. No, I had no ambition to career.
The accommodation that you had on the ship, what was that like?
All right. Was on, that ship was, except on the deck. Yeah, I know. Just on the, you put your blankets down on the deck and on the mess table, you cover the mess tables and all set down like that, all over the place.
Mm. Was it crowded?
Oh, yes. There's women aboard as well, men, women, high ranks, high ranking officers, French, Belgium, I think it was all sorts on that ship. Yeah, that's had a different crew, yeah. Because on a night I had to go from the pantry boy up to, well, I'll call it, you go through the big luxury staircase and all these top notches were there, officers, women, with the red caps, and red bands on the officers, general, God knows what they were. There was French, and there was a lot of French.
So you're sleeping on the decks?
Oh, yes.
And were you actually feeding with in relation with your job, wherever you were? Was that where you fed?
Fed? Me? I got the best. I'm in the cold house.
And you weren't on the decks eating?
Oh, no, I was. All the rest were. I was one of the lucky ones in the cold house. The chef, after everything was done, after all the meal was served, the chef had come and said, "What do you want, Bob?" I got well with the crew.
Was it better food than you had been used to on land before you sailed?
Ship food was very, very good. Oh, yeah, very good. And I was in this tube, I was in this chef. And he was French, a chef. And they say, come and say, what do you want, Bob? And whatever fancy, breakfast, dinner.
But when you had Reveille on your ship, then and you clothed and washed, so you went to do your job?
No, I was up before, I had a big call up early. I was away in Victoria Valley, maybe about five, I think it was.
And it was full time?
Because all the meat had to be cooked, you know, ready for the everybody else. So we were caught. We had somebody give us a shake. What part of the morning, about now before everybody else. Because go do a job in the cookhouse.
And what time would you be finished doing the work?
Oh, we finish the meal is about 1 o'clock, down the first class about 1 o'clock. But then they'd have 4 o'clock tea with the officers, you know, posh the tea, 4 o'clock biscuits, things like that. I was there then.
So between the meals and you'd done your duty, you were at rest, where you could do what you wanted?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, then the officers had an evening meal. They were living first class.
And you were back for the evening meal?
Oh, yes, I went back to Wanda.
On a crowded ship and a long journey, what did you do when you weren't working?
When I was working, I was quite busy, or quite active. With being active like that, I was quite happy. See? I had a job to do. I was looking at other people. Bored. They never bored me. They wouldn't have seen things like that never bored me. I'm going aboard the ship and you could see the dolphins and fly fish. Think I would never then. From the past, I think I never thought I would see those. Although anything could have happened, because you're in convoy, we're in convoy naturally.
Was it a big convoy, did you call?
Yes. HMS Newcastle was our convoy. The bows had been shot away. You could see it. The bows. Every time we dipped a bit, we're still in the water. When it lifted a bit, all the water would shout. The bows were being shot away, the bows. And HMS Newcastle, I think, was going into some place to get repairs. Devon, most likely.
The Boat stations, was that a regular?
Oh yes.
Daily event.
Everybody had to work a life jacket. It was a white feeling, something on your shoulders, like you said. So you went in the water, would keep your head above water, this thing. It was also, there was a red light on, would come on. Just like a rear cycle light. If you hit the water, like a little red light would come on. It was in the dark, so to see where you were. But, yes, if you're seen without that light jacket, you wouldn't throw it. Yeah. Everybody carried that all the time.
Ships that. Inspections by the captain or
every day.
Again, that was an everyday event.
Oh, the captain come around every day, looking at the cookhouse, looking all over, even the quarters where the men were, everywhere. Like everyday event that the captain. Mm. He came around it. Yeah, so. But personally, I enjoyed it. As I say, I enjoyed travelling. Mm. Yeah.
At the evening time, when all your work was done, and obviously the rest of the people on board the ship, what kind of activities were there for you?
Well, they kind of games and bingo, lottery, I think they called it then. Lotto or something, those days. Bingo, anyway, I'll put it now. Plenty of that, yeah. About every night then.
Gambling, was the gambling going on? Gambling schools or dens,
right,
or whatever?
On the, men on their own, like, yeah, they would gamble. Weren't supposed to, but they'd be playing cards, they'd gamble playing cards, yeah.
And I believe it was frowned on, wasn't it, gambling?
Oh, yes, they wouldn't be like gambling. But the men did. Men did it, yeah.
Was a canteen on board the ship?
Oh, yes. There was no drink. Was it? No drink.
No alcohol?
No alcohol. No alcohol, no. I couldn't have done one. Been on a ship like that. Anything happened? Yeah. No alcohol. It was a canteen where you get tea and biscuits or whatever, yeah.
Mm. I think you said it was you say from Glasgow, did you? Was it Gourock? Was it near Glasgow?
Went up to Clyde, you went up to Stranraer. Stranraer was it? Was it Stranraer? No, kind of thing. No, I went straight to Clyde.
And sailed from there?
Sorry, I went from Leeds to the Clyde, and the train was on the quayside. And we got on this ferry. The ferry, the Louis Pasteur was in the middle of the Clyde. The ferry took us to the Louis Pasteur.
And the route itself, did you know which direction you were sailing? Was that announced to you every day?
No. The only thing that was announced was the time. The time kept changing. It was put on the board. The time changed every day.
You're not sure what route you took? You didn't sail out in the Atlantic or what have you?
We were told in the Atlantic to dodge the submarines. We were told that because it took us 6 weeks to get from Clyde to Devon. 6 weeks. Mm. But we were told we had to go, we moved right to practically America or Canada and moved down to keep water all the submarines, the U-boats. Mm.